Hi, and welcome to another episode of the SIRS Group podcast. I'm JC.
And I'm Barbara.
And today we are joined by Dr. Christian Navarro Torres. He's been on a couple episodes of the SIRS Group podcast, but we're very excited to have him back. And today we are talking about a spicy topic, nicotine. And to preface this, we are not promoting smoking or vaping, and this is not condoned by the Shoemaker Protocol, but it is an interesting discussion, so we wanted to bring it to the table. That said, none of us are medical providers, so none of this is medical information. And for context of this episode, a really great thing to do would be to go watch our VIP episode that we just did. It's going to give you a lot of good context and background for what we're going to be talking about today, which is nicotine. So Christian, after all of that words, all of those words, do you want to go ahead and kind of tell us why we're talking about this today?
Thank you for having me again. It's always a pleasure. And yeah, nicotine is one of these really interesting topics at the forefront of a lot of research, actually, especially as it ties to neurodegeneration and neurodegenerative diseases. So, what is nicotine? Well, nicotine is a naturally occurring chemical that binds to something that we call nicotinic acetylcholine receptors. These receptors are found throughout the body, but they're mainly found in your nervous system, in the brain, and in muscle tissues. And once they're active, once these receptors are active, they set off a chain reaction that stimulates hormones and neurotransmitters. So things like serotonin, which has to do with regulating your mood, your sleep, your appetite, pain. Acetylcholine, which has to do with memory formation and your control of muscles, your contraction of muscles. Norepinephrine, which has to do with arousal and stress response, things like that. And then the big one, which is dopamine, which is essentially our sense, where our sense of reward and motivation comes from. And nicotine essentially will stimulate all of these things. And for that reason, a lot of people who take nicotine in some format, whether it's smoking or vaping or in pure format, which is where we're going to be focusing on, they experience heightened cognitive functioning and heightened functioning in some of these other aspects because of all these neurotransmitters being stimulated. Okay, so what's the why nicotine? Is there a connection here with SIRS? We think, or at least I think, based on research, looking at all kinds of studies over the last several decades, that there is an important set of overlaps between nicotine and VIP. Or at least that's one of them. That's one of the axes where we think there's some kind of important overlap. One of the biggest overlaps between nicotine and VIP is that they both have strong neuroprotective effects, and I already alluded to this. And so there's a long history of research looking at the effects of nicotine for the brain in positive ways. And there's many studies showing significant reduction in symptoms of Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, for example. And that's very well documented. It's very well established in the literature. This is not like one study or something like that. It's been around for quite a few decades now. And
Yes, I have seen his Google Drive folder of studies, and I can confirm it's not a small amount of studies. It
Yeah,
is a very many amount of studies.
all of the studies, every study.
there's even more studies, and I guess I've tried to focus on the ones that I think are the most relevant. And there's also research showing significant reduction or full remission of depressive symptoms, right? So it's quite powerful, and the hypothesis is that it's because of all this activity that's going on in these acetylcholine receptors that are being stimulated by nicotine. The second biggest overlap is that they both modulate the immune system in very similar ways. And so, right, so we talk, when you think about SIRS, we're talking about excessive innate immune activity, so a lot of inflammation in the form of flu-like symptoms and, fever, a lot of pain in the body. That becomes very active, hyperactive in SIRS. And you have a lot of downregulation of your adaptive immune system, which is the part of the immune system that creates antibodies for you. And so VIP, we know that helps regulate that immune response in SIRS. It's one of the reasons why we go back to sort of normal after completion of VIP. And it turns out that nicotine has very similar immune modulating effects. And in fact, there's research showing that nicotine, like VIP, can suppress inflammatory pathways that respond to both endotoxins and actinones. So, we're not saying we have the data for SIRS, but it is an interesting hypothesis to see, let's say, if we look at GINI markers, that the markers that are specific for endotoxins and actinos, could we see some kind of changes in, in these overexpressions of these genes tied to those biotoxins and modulate them through a course of nicotine? We don't know, but at least the literature suggests that it could do that. And then lastly, the third, it's kind of like more like a sequential consequence, is that nicotine can actually stimulate VIP receptors in your brain. So, there are neurons in your brain that will stimulate the promotion of VIP, and they get stimulated by nicotine, by these acetylcholine receptors. So there might be all these downstream consequences of nicotine that are potentially beneficial for SIRS patients, including that. And also, I'll say as a bonus, there's some animal studies showing that it can stimulate MSH receptors as well. So there's all these really interesting things that I think it would be fascinating to get some data on. So that's in terms of, why are we talking about nicotine and what's the overlap here between treatment and nicotine?
I just want to say, but Dr. Christian, what about cancer and nicotine?
That's a really good question. So I guess that's jumping in a little bit into, like anything that we take, there's always potential risks and benefits, and you want to outweigh them. So if you're someone who's been, and I'm not saying this as a medical practitioner, this is just strictly from a research perspective, there is research suggesting that nicotine can stimulate what we call growth factors, and this could include things like VEGF, which is a marker in SIRS that we monitor. And it's typically very low, right? And that's where we get a lot of the fatiguing or like just weak body weakness, poor blood flow issues. But when that marker becomes very high, it's actually correlated with, in some cases, with tumor formation. There's some literature showing that. So if you're someone that has already been diagnosed with cancer, maybe nicotine might not be this, we don't know for sure, but it might be safest to at the very least consult with your doctors to make sure, is this okay to do? Because it can stimulate these growth factors, namely can increase VEGF. And some SIRS patients like me actually have high levels of VEGF instead of having low levels. So these are things that are definitely you want to discuss with your doctor.
And it's my understanding that a lot of the cancer risk seems to be from the actual act of smoking and all of the additives and chemicals and things that go into cigarettes. And what we're talking about here, of course, is like the pure nicotine form in basically just nicotine, if there's a way to just take that. Is that correct? There's a difference there.
That's a great point. So yeah, we should make the distinction between di the different modalities of nicotine. And right, a lot of the research on the negative effects of nicotine have been in the context of smoking. And we know that smoking has a lot of the negative effects are too large. I think it's a case where the risks are too outweigh the potential benefits for at least a portion of the population. We also know that vaping can be just as problematic, and it's because partly or largely because of all the chemicals and ingredients that are added into these mediums. But if you have just pure nicotine, either in the form of patches or some kind of oral format, it's different in terms of not showing all these risks with things like cardiovascular disease and all these chronic diseases. So that's an important distinction to be made. As far as I know, it has a, pure nicotine has a very, very safe profile, for, the average person.
So, like any good patient, well, do we want to get into the COVID study now?
We can, yeah, we can.
So I know in the group, it was being passed along recently that some people had found this study about COVID and nicotine. And it was something that you had shared with me previously, but it was a really interesting study because it was about long COVID and the participants took nicotine. They did patches in the study for a period of time, and some of them had symptom resolution of anosmia, which is the when you lose your sense of smell, it's a common symptom of long COVID, but resolution within 14 days, I think.
That study, it's very a brand new study. It's a group of clinical practitioners who I think have been after nicotine for some time and looking at links. Prior to this study, there were some epidemiological studies showing correlations between rates of COVID and smokers. Again, we're not saying, oh, smoking is good. But it does have nicotine as a main, as one of the main ingredients, and there were studies showing that the rates of COVID were lower in that population on average, not for everybody necessarily, but it's just these are trends, and so that was an interesting precursor to think about what's going on here. So these doctors published a very recent study where they do an intervention, a short intervention with nicotine for patients who are suffering from long COVID specifically, right? So after they've had the infection, they don't test positive for COVID anymore, but they still have these lingering symptoms that they scream SIRS, they smell like SIRS, everything's about it seems to be SIRS, but let's just call it long COVID. Okay, so what's the connection here? Well, it turns out that the COVID spike protein has very high affinity to these acetylcholine receptors that I mentioned at the beginning or earlier, meaning that nicotine and the COVID spike protein, they both compete for binding to these receptors. So they fight, right? To see who's going to park in these receptors, who's going to take over. And so one possible reason for long COVID happening, or at least one contributor, is that the spike protein dysregulates essentially cytokine activity or pro-inflammatory activity and replicates very aggressively via these acetylcholine receptors. It's like their entryway into the body. From there, they can just start partying, essentially, right? And so that's the hypothesis that this study was entertaining. And what they did was they administered, I think it was 7.5 milligrams of nicotine patches. So this is on the
Except for
skin.
one guy. That was my favorite part of the
Oh,
study. The researcher put like a line about how
50
one guy picked up,
milligrams.
yeah,
It
like
was
he
like,
picked up the wrong dosage.
and I think that person had some, was it nausea? I think that was the symptom that popped up. The only negative symptom. I'm like, yeah,
Sounds about right. This one guy.
one guy who I think wanted to be very adventurous, like I suppose. But so the other cases, and I think this was a total of four or five case studies, I think, or cases. So it's a relatively small sample, and it's it's good to acknowledge that, but it's still valuable information because you can still infer patterns. So they have that dose of 7.5 milligrams of nicotine patches over the course of about 7 days, I believe, where they had daily, every morning, they had a patch assessed. And basically, the take home of this is that there were significant symptom relief in long COVID symptoms. And you mentioned one of them, the loss of smell and taste, chronic fatigue, shortness of breath, cognitive functioning, digestive issues. It's a long list of symptoms that we're all very familiar with in the context of SIRS. And all of these patients basically experience immediate either symptom relief, like significantly, or resolution of the symptoms in some of them. And these improvement persisted even after about 10 days of stopping the nicotine regimen. So it wasn't just, they were able to stop, and then they continue to experience these benefits. So yeah, it's a very interesting study, and I think that opens a lot of questions, and it certainly opens up questions in the context of SIRS, given what we just talked about the overlap between nicotine and VIP on paper, at least.
So, like any good patient, I recently talked to my provider and I was like, please don't fire me, but I've been trying nicotine. So we should talk about kind of our experience with trying this out as a replacement for VIP. And just as a lead into this, I wanted to preface with saying that I did do VIP for a period of time. I did it for about 6 months. And then I had to switch providers, so I was off VIP for a period of a couple months and then started the nicotine. And I chose to do that, donating my body to science pre-death. So we can have more information and we can see what the patient experience might be like with nicotine.
Absolutely. So what were, do you mind if you don't mind sharing what was your some of your experience with nicotine relative to VIP? And we both have that because I'm currently on VIP and I had nicotine before that. So I have a way to kind of compare the two, but I'm curious about yours.
So when I started nicotine, it was this experience of it didn't really feel like it was doing anything the first week or so. And you scale up dosage of VIP. I should mention that as well. But over time, it was like I had these moments of feeling normal, and then those moments turned into hours, hours turned into days, days turns into weeks, and then eventually I just had normal as my baseline. And I had a very similar experience with nicotine, and it was interesting because I had the context of VIP before I tried nicotine. And I'm not someone who's ever, I've never smoked before, so I never knew what nicotine might feel like for me. But I remember the first time I took it, I went on a dog walk and I was texting both of you, and I was like, the colors are so intense. And it wasn't like I was high in that sense, it was just like this overwhelming sense of clarity, like the brain fog had lifted for me.
You were high
Wow.
though, also. But yes, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, that's really cool. I think I had, yeah, I definitely had overlap between nicotine. So I did about what 5 to 6 months of nicotine before starting VIP. So with nicotine, when I started, one of the first things that I started noticing is I started experiencing changes in my appetite because since I got sick with SIRS, I kind of lost my sense of appetite and it kind of came back at least for a little bit, which is really interesting. I'm also one of these patients who's extremely hyperreactive. Once I got sick with SIRS, I'm one of those cannery type of people. Which has been very difficult for me. And once I started taking nicotine, those reactivities went down almost immediately by, let's say, I'd say about 30, 35%. So I started to tolerate places and areas that I had a trouble either walking by, like if I was going to the groceries and I always passed through this like area where there was this sketchy drain area. Probably some endotoxin thing going on there. And I noticed and I started walking past by those areas and I wasn't reacting to them. So I had that. I started sleeping better. It was like the first time where I really started feeling like I'm actually sleeping. I also had a lot of these frequent excessive urination, urgency symptoms, thirst, and that started to also go down. And at one point it kind of went away. The one downside that I had that was almost immediate was that I became very histaminic. And I'm not surprised because nicotine, actually like VIP, can both stimulate histamine production. And there might be a timing aspect of it where, depending where you're at in this treatment, it may actually, make you more histaminic at least temporarily. So I had that was the only downside that I experienced with nicotine. And then once I started doing very, an intensive regimen of mast cell and histamine control, it started to calm down and I was able to continue increasing my nicotine dose and tolerate it very well. And then once I started doing VIP, I felt a lot of these same things. There was a little bit more on the cognitive functioning that I experienced from VIP in terms of like feeling like my brain was on steroids compared to nicotine. And my sense is that I think VIP, at least how we take it now, like we don't know what dose would you need for nicotine to have comparable effects to VIP, assuming this hypothesis is correct, right? And it might be that there are things that VIP will do that nicotine doesn't, that are still important. So anyways, yeah, so those were some of my experiences.
And when he says his brain was on steroids, he just means that he has like a normal functioning brain. Because, like, can we just give you a round of applause for finishing a PhD while you have SIRS? Like, that's insane to me. I can't imagine what that was like to go through. And it's amazing to see you recovering and just like see you visually looking so much better in the time that we've known you. And like, if anyone deserves to feel well, it's you, Christian. So I'm so happy for you. I'm so glad you've been experiencing these benefits. But Barbara, what was your experience with nicotine? We want to know.
Well, before we get into it, and don't worry, I'm not putting it off. I also want to acknowledge the fact that Christian did all that while also having ADHD, because we've obviously talked about that in a previous episode. I failed out of college 4 times. I have ADHD. I like to blame ADHD for that, but Christian did not have that issue. So I'm just very
Well,
impressed on that level too.
I appreciate that. It looking back, it did present a lot of barriers. You know, I there's there were a lot of challenges that I think were really tied to that. And yeah, so you know, I guess you do your best. But one thing I will say is that being part of the SIRS group has been a really amazing tool for me to kind of navigate this whole process of treatment. And exploring things like nicotine in a way that, you know, you don't feel isolated as a patient. You know, I have all the science and research background, but when you're just by yourself doing this, it's not the same. And to be able to share with the community in a way that's healthy, I think has been very helpful for me. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for saying that. But I guess I shouldn't say I failed out of college. I just kind of got bored and stopped going. That's a little different, but to be fair to myself. Anyway, so my experience with nicotine. Well, of course, seeing friends experiment with a drug, I had to as well, because that's been my life. So for nicotine, this was fun. I only tried it a couple times. I think maybe I wasn't either far enough along in my healing process, potentially, and or still in exposure. So that is like a thing that can affect the experience. And so for me, the experience was using one of the nicotine pouches, and basically I put it in my mouth and left it in too long, in my opinion. I should have gone a little bit slower. Unfortunately, nicotine is the type of thing that, or at least a pouch is the type of medication where if you're starting to feel the effects, it's too late. You should have taken it out sooner, especially if you're just getting started. So that was my experience. I waited until I started feeling the effects. And by effects, I just mean kind of like light, a lightheadedness, not an alarming dizziness, but just like that light,
Like a
fluffy feeling.
giddiness.
A giddiness.
Yeah.
And that giddiness traveled to my stomach very quickly and made it kind of do a few somersaults and flips, and I just did not feel well. In fact, I wanted to run to the bathroom, but before I did, I just needed to sit and like breathe. There was a little bit of that going on. I remember that it was just a very, very intense feeling. It is a strong drug if you take more than you're ready for. I just have to say, I'm kind of shocked at its legalness to an extent, because it's just so powerful. And again, I left it in my mouth too long, so that makes sense. But yeah, it is a stimulant, so in that way, it stimulated my GI system to the point where I did eventually then run to the bathroom. And so that was fun. But yeah, that was my experience with it. There are nicotine poops to be aware of, apparently. So just make sure you try your first dose at home when you're comfortable.
I was going to say it's worth mentioning format here. So nicotine is a supplement. It's available over the counter. And I have been taking, per Christian's recommendation, Knick Knack. I think Christian has a discount code for us for Knick Knack.
I do. It's SIRS Lab 10. It's a 10% discount. And I just want to jump in really quickly to say that, I'm someone who's super hypersensitive to ingredients, weird little ingredients. And it turns out that if you look at nicotine products, they all have these hidden ingredients. And I'm like, I cannot take that. I tried the skin patch version and I reacted horribly to it. I have a hypothesis about it. I don't know if it's really true, but in any case, so I found this product. It's literally the only product that I found that was very clean, that only has two ingredients, xylitol and essentially like an essential oil like peppermint or whatever it is that it has in there. It's super, super clean.
I've
So
gotten the
yeah.
multi-packs a couple of times. My favorite flavors are the mint flavors. Blood orange, for some reason, it reads as spicy to me. Don't know what's going on there. It's the only flavor I don't recommend. The rest have been wonderful. But the mints, you just put it kind of like your chipmunk, you tuck it into your cheek and let it dissolve. And I think it's just a slower absorption than the pouch. And I have kind of a backup for this. I got my roommate onto nicotine. I was just like it just makes you feel mentally more aware, more acute. And so he was like, cool, I'm gonna try it. And he recently went on a trip, and on that trip, someone was doing a nicotine pouch, and he decided to try it, and he almost immediately had to take it out of his mouth because he was like, this is like too much too fast. So it really does seem like the mint is the like slower way to go if you do have that concern.
That's a good
Yeah.
point, because I think for the pouch option, I think the smallest that I had available to me was a 3 milligram, and I think the gum comes in like 1 or 1.5 at to start, right?
The mint,
Or
I
the
know the
mints. I'm sorry, the
knickknack.
mints. That's what I meant.
The mints are 3 milligrams, but what I
Oh.
did, I just broke the mint into like pieces and started
Oh,
with
okay.
like maybe like 0.5 milligram, and then try to get my way to 3, and eventually I worked my way to 9 milligrams, which is where I'm at now.
Got it. Cool.
Yeah. What about you, JC? What are you?
So I started with the 3 milligram mints, and I would break them into threes, and I would do 1 milligram at a time. Now I have moved on to the 6 milligram mints. So they come in either 3 or 6 milligram in the mint itself, and now I'm doing 12 milligrams a day. I still break it into half for each, so I do 3 milligrams at a time, and I kind of space it throughout the day. I have the same reaction as Barbara, where like I just start feeling a little bit nauseous. And you had mentioned that is serotonin being produced by the gut.
Yeah. Yes. Probably it's stimulating tons of serotonin throughout the digestive tract, and that probably is inducing this sense of nausea. So that can be a good way to kind of figure out how to pace yourself with dosage. If you're pushing too hard or not.
Euphoric
But
nausea.
euphoric nausea.
Giddiness,
Yes. Giddiness.
giddiness, aka giddiness.
Yeah.
Feel like your high school crush is in the room with you again. That's
Oh gosh, that's
the visual.
dread.
Is it dread? Oh
That's
no, never
dread.
mind.
Another thing we should mention, because this really helped with my nicotine use, was arginine.
How do you think it helped you? Was it to offset some of the negative symptoms or?
Yeah, I just felt like this tightness, like
Okay.
I should preface this with saying, like, I have a history of chronic bronchitis, and so my
Yeah.
lung capacity is basically zero.
Yeah.
But when I was first started doing VIP, and again, when I first started doing nicotine, I just felt like it was a little bit harder to breathe, not in like a scary way, but it just felt a little more tight. But once I started incorporating 1,000 milligrams of arginine a day, it just felt more
Yep.
open. This is not medical terms.
It's funny you say that because I did exactly the same thing. Somehow that combination was very good. And I suspect part of the reason is that nicotine has vasoconstricting effects on some parts of your body. So those would be mainly your muscle tissues. So, and so I could imagine that could, affect, how you feel about the lungs maybe and just right. So, but, right. And so arginine, on the other hand, has vasodilating effects. So it opens up your arteries, improves blood flow. And so that could be potentially a good way to offset any vasoconstricting effects from nicotine. And again, it's not all It's not throughout your whole body. Actually, in some parts of your body, like in your brain, there's vasodilation taking place because of nicotine. So it really depends on what part of the body. The other thing that I'm thinking that could have been happening, and it happened to me with BIP too. I started having like the first couple of days, like something with my lungs. And I wonder if it's a little like TGF beta 1 spike that can happen at the beginning of BIP, and you were experiencing some of that.
Yeah, just in thinking about what you're saying about the vasoconstriction in muscles, one of my big symptoms from the autoimmune condition I had that was triggered by SIRS was enthesis, and I had a lot in the connective tissue in my rib cage. So I wonder if it's kind of targeting that old scar tissue.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. Might be. For me, I was really important to monitor this because I've never smoked, I've never taken nicotine before this, and I ran several experiments actually during the first like month or two where I deliberately stopped nicotine for a period of, let's say, like 4 or 5 days, and I didn't experience any sort of like huge cravings or anything like that. I was able to take it out, and I've done that a couple times ever since then. And so far I haven't noticed any addiction, sort of very classic addiction symptoms where you have like really bad headaches or the cravings, a lot of like nausea, or maybe even some vomiting or things like that. I haven't had anything like that.
Yeah, I've had a similar experience. If I don't set like a reminder, if I don't intentionally do the nicotine every day, I would forget. Like I would literally not even think to do it. The benefits that I get from it at this point, because I've been on VAP so long, I've been on nicotine so long, and I've been out of exposure for so long, like it feels like I could stop. And I don't even know if I would notice a difference if I added it back in. At this point, I'm just waiting to get blood work to see like where things are going. But I've also run out a couple of times because I'm really bad at remembering to reorder my supplements. And nicotine has definitely fallen into that category, especially since I'm ordering directly from like a specific website versus Amazon where I get everything else. And yeah, I've gone a few days without it, and it's like I don't crave it. I don't get headaches. I don't experience any negative symptoms that make me think that I'm starting to become addicted to it.
Good stuff.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. I only took it a couple times, so I have no data for myself, but I believe you guys.
So, I mean, I feel like we've kind of brought this discussion to the table and we've kind of talked about our experience. For me, I think the really exciting thing is like thinking about how this could open up SIRS treatment for so many people. On the one hand, I know that peptides generally are being taken off the market. Just generally in the medical community, they're not as accessible. So for people who are dependent on VIP to correct, to finish the SIRS protocol, having another option, having another potential thing to look at is really incredible. And then two, for people who aren't in the United States, it's difficult for them to see a SIRS provider. They only have the option of working with like a SIRS proficiency partner to kind of lead them through the protocol. Like I just imagine this could really open up treatment for a lot of different segments. But that said, we need the research. We need this to be studied.
Yes, and another area in which it could be very beneficial is if you've completed, the 12 steps, but you want to have some kind of maintenance dose, for something that could be analogous to BIP, at least in some aspects, just to keep your body under control. Nicotine could potentially be something along those lines, for some patients, where it can help keep the immune system in check. It can help keep the illness in remission over long stretches. So we don't know, but it's certainly, yes, I hope that we can figure out different ways to have patients have access to treatment options that are more affordable for the reasons you said, JC. I think, yeah, that's really important.
And to be clear, Christian says 12-step program as in the Shoemaker protocol, not a drug rehab. I can't can't stop
But no,
myself,
I feel
guys.
like it has to be said. When you said 12 steps, I had this moment of like, are we calling it that?
It's too got we got drugs on the brain, guys. I mean, nicotine, come on. It's like anyone over the age of, is it 18? It's 18, right? Can go buy it. It's not like that. We're not
Well,
talking about street drugs here.
I put it on the category of caffeine, if anything. I think they're closer to that. I'd say that alcohol is a much more dangerous
Absolutely.
substance.
Absolutely. I agree with that completely. But I will say the nicotine has it packs such a punch if you're not ready for it, or if you just kind of go overboard on your dose, like I apparently did. I'm still like a little bit shocked at how strong it is. I mean, it's not a bad thing. It just was a lot. So it surprised me.
No, I think you do want to, implement caution and, whenever you're introducing something like this, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like when you're if you drink coffee for the first time, you shouldn't have like a, four espresso shot drink to like kick things off. You want to start slow. Similarly, you can do the same with nicotine.
Meanwhile, I was a 10-year-old. My mom would drive me to school. We'd stop at this little shack that sold coffee. I would get like a double espresso and then a chocolate covered espresso beans with my coffee as a 10-year-old. Parenting, please. But like yourself, you know what you can handle. I recommend starting out slow, especially if you do the mints. It's so easy to break them apart, so there's really no reason not to. And then if you do start feeling kind of buzzy, and sometimes I do this, like if I'm about to eat something, I'll just take it out and like set it to the side. It dries out and you can pop it back in. The mint format for me is just like so convenient. So convenient. Like you can travel with it. That's something we didn't even talk about. VIP, like if you travel with that, it has to be refrigerated. But the mints you can just pack like in a bag. So I think it has so much potential and I'm so excited to see if, I hope that the Surviving Mold group decides to do some studies on this and like in the context of the SIRS community. But Christian, we're so excited to see you at SIRS X a little bit later this year in May. And in the meantime, where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me in my Instagram platform, first and foremost, which is Search Lab. We also have the platform extended into YouTube and Facebook, but the bulk of our content is going to be on Instagram.
All right, follow
Well,
Serge's lab.
we'll link all that in the show notes as well.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. We always appreciate our time with you. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us, and we can't wait for whatever next episode we do. But if you're looking to hang out with us in the meantime, you can find us over at the Serge's group.
See you there.